Ultraviolet light, it gives us suntans, sunburn, it helps us make vitamin D. But we humans can't see it. It's invisible to us, but not to many animals. Their eyes can see UV light, and as a result, they see the world very differently to the way we see it. Reindeer's eyes are particularly UV sensitive. It's estimated that a high-tech camera can only pick up 5% of the UV light that a reindeer's eye can see. But why is it important? Well, there are all sorts of sources of UV light. One of them is from overhead power cables. And it turns out that reindeer and other animals are being scared off by the UV flashes that emit from these power cables, flashes that we cannot see. And it's affecting habitats and migration. Glenn Jeffrey has been doing research into this. He is Professor of Neuroscience at University College London. He specialises in how animals see the world. And he's in the BBC studios in London today. Good afternoon, Jeffrey. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Now, is it true that you and your team had a eureka moment regarding UV light while answering a call of nature?
Yes, it was. We've been out in the field for about a week. This is up at the top of Norway, deep in the Arctic. We were pretty dirty. We were pretty miserable. And we stopped. We stopped because we all desperately needed the loo, miles from anywhere. And we were answering the call of nature when we were under the power cable and we could hear it buzz. And we'd been working on UV for ages. We'd shown that reindeer could see UV. And one character said, power cables give off UV. And then the next character said, reindeer don't go near power cables. And that was the start of the project, really. It was a realisation that we were linking different things together. For some time, the Sami, the local native population up there, had complained that their reindeer sometimes wouldn't go within 5 kilometres of a power cable in winter. So it's a big issue.
Now, I called you Jeffrey. I apologise. I should have said Glenn. Sorry about that, Glenn. My apologies.
Okay, yeah.
Richard, you want to say something?
Yes, you slipped up very badly there, Glenn.
Oh, after don't be all, insulting our guest.
It was the urine that. She's urine that gives off UV light, I believe, and that kestrels can detect the urine secreted by our little rodents, and that's how they find them. So if only you could see UV, you could have looked downwards rather than upwards. Would you develop that for us a bit?
Yes, in actual fact, we have looked at urine. We got the Norwegian army to take us miles from anywhere, and we cut out blocks of reindeer urine in the ice, and then we dragged them over and we shone a UV light on them and we filmed it. And it was definitely the case that in UV, the urine, instead of being a sort of slight yellow on white, was actually quite a deep grey on white. So the contrast was enhanced. There are many things that it fits into the reindeer's life. The lichens that come through the snow in winter, seen in UV, are absolutely black. They're not dark green. So again, it increases contrast. But you're right, a number of different animals do use UV light, and I'm sure there's loads of different examples of it out there if we can tap into them.
Yes, it's said that some fruits give off a UV reflection, which certain birds can spot. And you see in the book's references that male birds, their plumage is capable of reflecting UV to a greater extent than females, the better to advertise their eligibility as partners. And of course, polar bears, don't forget them, they're black. And because the UV passes right through the fur, right through and warms them up, or so I'm told.
Well, it's certainly the case that, for instance, Arctic mammals such as seals, when the Canadians do their big counts of seals, what they do is they film from 2,000 feet and they film in UV. And the fur, which looks white, actually differentiates them, and that gets absorbed by the UV when the snow reflects it. So when you look down with your eye, all you see is a white sheet. When you look down with UV, there's loads of big black spots on it, and that's how they do their seal counts.
Glenn, just to ask if I might, Ken here, in terms of the selection pressure that would be on an animal like a reindeer to develop this sensitivity to UV, what good is it to a reindeer? Okay, he can see power cables, but obviously nature didn't know power cables were going to come along. So what use is it in the real world? And is it only us that can't see the UV? Is this something that's very widespread in the animal kingdom?
Well, we were shocked to find that nearly all mammals see UV. I mean, previously it had been thought that mammals largely can't see UV. But we did a very, very large study looking in zoos at a vast range of animals. And it's clear they can see UV. We can't. And the reason may be to do with the fact that UV is a very, very short wavelength, and short wavelengths scatter a lot in the eye. Now, our eyes are very, very precisely evolved to see very, very fine detail as mammals. And if we had a lot of blue light knocking around in the eye, then it would be scattering. It would blur the image. And if you go back in time, when they replaced people's cataracts with very, very early plastic lenses, they didn't block the UV. And people were reporting some really interesting visual experiences.
But yes, things like birds of prey can see in UV, and they are noted for the excellence of their vision. So isn't there a contradiction
Absolutely.
Here?
Absolutely. I think the difference is in the evolution of the eye between mammals and birds. It really is a completely different system. It's evolved in a different way, and it's involved for different things. But you're absolutely right. We are aware of that kind of problem. And in the end, I think all we can say is that the two systems have evolved very differently to do different things, and they're ducking and diving in different ways. I know that's a bit of a cop-out, but that's the only explanation we have.
Well, there's another irony here, because we call colour. Colour doesn't exist. Of course, it's an artificial creation of our nervous systems in response to the length of waves coming in. And of course, the shortest wave that we are sensitive to gives us a sensation of violet, which means that a shorter wave still will be called ultraviolet. Now, isn't it odd that we are colour vision creatures and we can't see UV, whereas the rest of the mammal kingdom are very much impaired in terms of colour vision, and yet they can?
You're very, very true. But I think you need to step away from colour vision here. If we find some animals do have a violet or UV receptor in their eye, something that's tuned specifically for that wavelength. But the vast majority of mammals don't. And what they actually see is not violet, but what they're doing is they're just extending their visual range. So all mammals ultimately have a nocturnal history in their evolution, and they're animals that are hungry for light. What we do is we've given up some light. We say below 400 nanometers, we're not interested. But some of these animals that live in dark places are animals that can't afford to throw light away. And a good example of this, for instance, is deep diving seal. Deep diving seals have got amazingly transmissive lenses for UV, but they've got no receptors for it. But I think it's because they're hungry for any light, and whether it's UV or not, they don't care. They don't see it as a colour. It's just extra light.
And given, Glenn, the intention now to really, if you like, light up the darkness in terms of all these very remote areas and these great plans to put all sorts of power lines across Alaska and so on, I presume in the context of animal management, animal conservation and so on, your research is really telling us we need to be quite careful in terms of the reaction of big numbers of animals to these particular developments.
Well, it's certainly true if you're a wild animal. The Sami in northern parts of Norway and Finland, they have to migrate their animals between summer and winter pastures. Now, and the reindeer are their only source of income. Now, if there's a power cable in the way, the animals tend not to want to cross it. You've got to force them. So we end up in a ridiculous situation where we have a native population migrating their herd, and they get to a certain place and they've got to stick them all in a lorry and take them 10 kilometres. It is having quite a significant effect on animals in that part of the world. It's not impacting us quite so much down here, because I think the reason tends to be that our cows and our sheep, they have been used to humans for thousands of generations, and they just don't get spooked in the same way. But if I were to stick my head over a fence and there was a reindeer there, it basically wouldn't turn around and look at me until it had cleared 200 metres very quickly.
And is there any research ongoing at the moment, Glen, to start to think about coatings or something that might in some way take away this particular effect or absorb the UV on its way out?
Well, the big problem that we've had is that the power industry have not really wanted to, they've not wanted to talk, because anything that happens is going to cost them quite a lot of money. We have tried to engage. We've tried to point out that actually just even covering the insulators, those ceramic discs, covering those would actually make a significant difference. But we've not been able to engage with them yet.
Now, Glenn, what does an animal see? Now, 400,000 volts, which is the highest voltage at which transmission occurs, I think, anywhere, certainly in Ireland. And now, at that dreadfully high voltage, you're going to get ionisation. The little molecules of air are going to break apart into positive and negative ions. And you could conceivably get some kind of corona-type glow around a transmission line. And at the insulators, as you say, there could be little mini lightning strikes. So the whole thing becomes a gigantic electric fence running across the country. If you were a reindeer, what would you actually see? A series of sparks or a glowing corona or a mixture of both?
You'd see something you're not expecting. And that is because the 90% of the corona flash will actually be reflected by the snow surface underneath the power cable. So you've got a big flash coming from the ground. Then it's re-reflected from the base of clouds. And in winter in the Arctic, there's a lot of low cloud. So you will see across the horizon random flashes magnified by the ground snow and ice. And I think it's going to be rather like random fireworks. And it's the random nature of it which stops the animal from habituating to it. They won't go near it even in summer. They've learned that that part of town's a bad place to go.
But that's due to reflections from little nodes on the line that are imperfect in some way, or some damage has occurred. If the transmission line was pure, would there be any such radiation? And if we increase the length of the insulator strings hanging from the pylons such that arcing did not occur across them, would we eliminate the problem by better technology of high transmission lines?
You would reduce it. You wouldn't get rid of it. The other big player in this game is the atmosphere. So, for instance, if you get a hoar frost, a frost on a cable, if you get a very, very moist atmosphere, as you do in coastal regions, you get a very different type of corona, you get a more intense corona. We can improve on the situation, but I doubt if we can really get rid of it.
So we have to bury the cable. That's the only way. Could we create little openings? I believe that the reindeer population in Norway is fragmented into about 2 dozen isolated populations. They can't breed with each other because they can't cross these electric fences in the sky, so they're getting inbred in some cases. Now, if we were to create kilometre-long breaks in these transmission lines, at enormous expense, admittedly, would we eliminate the problem?
You would reduce the problem very significantly. You're absolutely right that populations get fragmented, and the fragmentation in southern Norway is 27 separate groups. Now, they were one group, they were all breeding together. There's 27 small groups now, and the consequence of that is genetically a time bomb. Those animals do not have will have reduced to genetic diversity. So yes, let's make very wide corridors. We'll have to bite the bullet on the cost of that, but at the end of the day, if we don't, we'll suffer the genetic diversity in all the animals that are affected.
And could I just ask you then, in the context of the reindeer themselves, because I spent some time working in Finland now some years ago, and I was told that these animals that I was looking at were well removed from the original wild ancestors. These in fact were farmed reindeer, even though they looked wild and even though they were traversing very large areas. Have we got an opportunity here perhaps to actually select out of those animals that are less fearful and try and produce populations of animals then that are less concerned about those flashes of light?
You could do. The population in Scandinavia is unusual. Many of the animals that I deal with are animals that, for the vast majority of time, are actually isolated out on their own, miles from anywhere. They're brought in by the Sami once or twice a year maximum, and they're counted. But they are still animals who are highly intolerant of human activity. I mean, sure, if you have a lot of contact with them, they become more manageable. But basically, they're very wild animals.
Glenn, fascinating stuff. And thank you so much for going into the studio today. We really do appreciate it.